We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Yeah, sounds like it. Sounds like Mizzou would somehow win the NCAA tournament this year, even though they didn't make the tournament. So
don't ever compare Slim Chickens to Mizzou ever again, okay? Or I will hang up on you right now.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I'm never 100% sure where we're going to land whenever the one, the only, Sterling Holmes joins the show. You can hear him weekdays with Darren and Sterling over on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. You can hear him on the Arrowhead Addict podcast, which also exists in video streaming and audio form, of course. Plus, you may even see a byline on Arrowhead Addict over on Inside the Royals on the SI Fan Nation Network. He's a man of many talents. Or at least a man that does a lot of things. I don't know how many talents you have, Sterling.
About three talents.
Three total talents.
Yeah, about three.
Name them.
Drinking Busch Light.
Would have bet my literal life on that being one of them.
Reading books.
Yes, big book fan, Sterling Holmes.
Making pot roast.
That's where we're going to start right there. Tell me about why you are an elite pot roast maker.
The key is in the beef broth.
Okay.
So sometimes people, they don't put too much, or they put too much beef broth in it,
sure.
And then you're sitting here with a soggy-ass pot roast. You
right.
That.
No, it's not. You're not making a stew or a soup. It's
no.
A pot roast isn't a stew. It's on the other side of a stew.
It's on the cusp of a stew, but not – I am stew, but not actual a stew.
Whenever you are sipping a bowl of thick broth, it's you're stewing right there.
Double stewing. But no, the key is in the amount of beef broth.
Okay.
The key is in how you cut the potatoes, because you know, if you get a full potato without cutting it, the inside's going to be a little too hard.
You're basically going to bite into an apple at that point.
And you got to let it simmer for about 8 hours on low.
Yeah.
The people that put it on high for four, no.
You can't.
You're cutting corners.
That's right.
You can't cut corners.
If you've learned anything from the famous works of Sting, you know, you can't rush a beautiful, wonderful thing. You've got to take your time. Tell me what are your mise en place? What's going into the pot roast other than the potatoes, the hunk of beef, I imagine, and the broth itself? What are you a carrots and celery and onion kind of guy?
Yeah, you got to get a good onion.
Yeah,
and you because the onion really makes it. Onion is the most underrated of all of the vegetables.
Rudy hates onions, and I'm totally with you.
Well, maybe that's why Rudy's not here.
Yeah, he's gone. He died. We powered him off for this segment, and then we'll power him back on again after this segment.
It's like a robot. You're just sitting here like, Rudy, get out of here.
We got to get him a power nap at any point possible. So we just told him, hey, Rudy, go ahead and step over into our little concussion closet or whatever and take a quick half-hour nappy, and then I'll bring you back out, and you'll be nice and rejuvenated.
Because dude probably makes his pot roast with energy drinks, typically.
He does Red Bull and then just a raw chicken thigh.
The onion makes it. The carrots make it. You got to have the long carrots. If you put the little baby carrots, those are good.
Yeah.
But get them full carrot.
That's right.
Come on.
We're hearty.
It's making a hearty meal. We're not babies.
Yeah, this isn't a bisque. You're not about to put this in the blender at the end. You want to have a little bite to your pot roast.
Exactly. And then you got to season it, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't have like a secret ingredient. You don't throw in some star anise. You don't throw in a little ginger or something. There's nothing weird, wonky off the wall.
It's classic. It's not a Thanksgiving that the person brings that thing you hate. They're like, you know how we make a good thing?
Yeah.
Well, let's make mac and cheese, but like put cream cheese in it for some reason.
Whoa,
I'm not that person.
Hold on. I was with you all the way until you said mac and cheese with cream cheese. And I thought that sounds pretty good. But I understand your logic there.
Yeah.
I think cream cheese and mac and cheese would probably be delicious.
Not the time. Thanksgiving's never the time to mess with a great thing.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that's the time that everyone wants to mess with a great thing. It blows my mind. Hey, you know how we're having 30 people over that like mashed potatoes?
What if I put raisins in it?
Yeah, what if I put raisins in it?
Yeah. I think that this is I think that this is a white people problem, though, also, where because Thanksgiving is a time when you can be like, hey, look, I've got a little I've watched some Gordon Ramsay, you know, I've watched some Food Network. Let me go ahead and try to flex a little bit for the family.
Yeah.
And then you show up and your entire family is like, why are there entire raw cranberries inside the mashed potatoes?
And then
like,
you find out grandma's allergic to cranberries and it's
a whole ordeal.
Favorite, least favorite Thanksgiving thing. I know we're on the other side of it, but we're talking about food now, and I like this space that we're in. I'm a little hungry.
Sweet potato casserole is elite.
Oh, I think that's near the bottom of my overrated, underrated.
Because if you make a good sweet potato casserole, incredible.
Yeah.
If it's a bad sweet potato casserole, it's horrendous,
that's
and
true.
It belongs in the trash.
That's true.
My aunt, or cousin technically, it's a lot of third cousins, and it's Southern Indiana. Not what you think. Don't give me that look. We're not Alabama over here. I'm telling you, she's like 40, and I'm 27, so when you're growing up, that's a huge age gap. Southern Indiana knows how to make food.
I'm going to
let that casserole,
let that one go,
blackberry cobbler, and sweet tea.
Blackberry cobbler sounds incredible.
Incredible.
Sounds incredible. What's your least favorite Thanksgiving staple? The one that you just say, you know what, maybe it's either the one that you pass over completely with your plate, or you take
peas.
A little
okay,
bit.
Okay, the peas I'm passing.
Just peas? Peas?
If people, like, that's not like a staple. If you're going to go with a staple, I might say dressing. I might go with the dressing.
Okay,
the stuffing.
So stuffing, dressing used synonymously there. I've really grown to appreciate the stuffing, I would say, in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years probably. As I have matured, so has my palate, so has my appreciation of a good thing of stuffing. Oh, I think technically, I think stuffing ends up getting made inside of the bird, and dressing is like stovetop, but I've only had the stovetop.
Yeah, I don't know the difference.
I'm not trying to dig bread out of a turkey to then eat it. It feels...
Anytime I'm digging something out of a cavity,
yeah.
It just sounds gross.
Yeah. No one ever says like, hey, real quick, scoop out what's inside of that cavity. And you go, oh, yummy. Like that. No, you're right. That doesn't sound good at all. You know what also might not sound good to your ears? Border Wars back, baby. You're wearing the little Mizzou quarter zip over your 810 polo right now. You are business casual, Sterling, which occasionally this man shows up in a suit because he's a fancy boy and for no other reason. But I ran this by you yesterday. I don't know why it even just came up, but I haven't talked to any Mizzou people all week. I haven't really drilled in on what people are looking forward to here. I like that KU and Mizzou are playing again, but how do you feel about this first just from the perspective of a Mizzou fan who's going to watch this game on Saturday?
I have my tissues ready. I'm going to cry.
Oh, you're that excited. Oh.
Man.
You're worried about it being bad.
Yeah, dude. Mizzou is horrible. I am the least excited about Konzo Martin there is. I'm excited the Border War's back, first and foremost. I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
This was what I remember as a kid. I remember growing up in the hallways and getting into arguments over KU Mizzou when they were both in the top 25. And Kansas is about to wax the floor. I don't want you to pick on anyone, but like Jordan Wilmore, the 7'2" guy who somehow plays like he's 6'3". He's going to get blocked 37 times. He might not get a rebound because Kobe Brown gets all of them. If Mizzou didn't have Kobe Brown, who's the Russell Westbrook of this Mizzou team.
Great reference.
They
great
might lose call. By 70.
Yeah, good.
I mean, you lose to UMKC. You lose to your feeder school. How are you going to do against a top 10 who I think, by the way, I went to Mizzou, so.
You can say all this. This is all safe for you.
But for like, I don't typically like Kansas, but. They're a Final Four team in my mind. Like, I think if I had to pick a Final Four team right now who's a lock, them, Gonzaga, KU's up there. I mean, they had so many great transfers. The transfer portal is meant for Bill Self in Kansas. But my God, this makes Kim Anderson's Mizzou team look decent. Like, Kevin Purrier, come back.
I got throttled by Liberty. You know, like that sentence is bad. Losing to UMKC,
well, dude,
being throttled by UMKC.
No one goes
rough.
Into the Liberty Flames arena and comes out alive. I mean, everyone knows the Liberty Flames is just a tough place to play.
They lost by 3 touchdowns to Liberty basketball.
Sounds like a KU football game. Yeah. But
fair. You know, you can't hurt me. I'm not I'm not invested. That's the thing. I'm Switzerland on this border war. And so for me, the thing that I've said this many times, I think that Mizzou is my favorite sad Twitter subset within Kansas City sports Twitter, because you Mizzou people are self-aware. You know what you are.
Oh, yeah.
At all times. You are deeply aware of both your shames and your flaws and your recent upsetting past, and in all likelihood, your soon-to-be upsetting future.
Sure.
Very self-aware of all of that, which bums me out a little bit, because the idea of this game actually, like, being a nail-biter at the end would make it... You say you're excited for the border war to be back. Can you imagine what it would feel like if there's 3 minutes left and this game is tied?
Did Kim English and Marcus Dinman come back? I mean,
yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, but yeah. It just makes me sad that this is the way that it's starting.
And that's the same thing for me. Is I'm very excited it's back, but this really sucks. I mean, Konzo Martin, year five. My goodness, are you serious? The only reason why he was hired was for Michael Porter Jr. And he played like five games.
5 minutes. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's like, dude, that's the only reason he was hired was for the Porter brothers. They're gone. He obviously can't recruit.
It's bad, man. Year five, like, sneaks up on you in this. Like, it doesn't feel like it's been that long, but
it
also feels
like
he's been a decade. Right. And for you, I imagine it really does feel that way.
He can't coach.
You're done. You are Martout. You're not Martin. You're Martout at this point.
I mean, the fact is, sure, he made it to the tournament last year, but that was through a lot of luck, and that was his four-year guys. I mean, that was his year where you're like, you have all of your seniors here. You have all your good players. And then he decides, hey, you know that guy who can't shoot? Let's play him over our best player so that way he transfers. So we lose our best player for next year and we have literally nothing besides Kobe Brown. It'd be like saying, hey, we have Steph Curry. Let's play Andre Roberson in a game when we need to come back. What? I am so ready. And but just full perspective here. Mizzou moved to the SEC.
Yes.
So they're getting a big boost in money.
Yeah.
You're playing with the big boys. Now act like you're a big boy. You're seeing teams around college basketball, college football, buying out coach, paying $10 million for a dude to leave.
Seems like a great deal.
It's a $1 million buyout at the end of, what is it, like, it's like, I don't know, April.
I think it's in
March.
$6
million
now.
So it's like a $5 million difference, whatever it is.
Yeah.
If you lose out on Kim English, who, and again, I'm not saying Kim English is going to be a great coach, but that's one thing that you know Mizzou fans, alumni, everyone's going to rally behind.
Right.
If Kim English doesn't pan out, no one's going to say a word. If Kim English decides to go to Maryland and you miss out on Kim English and you hire some other trash coach you can't recruit, there's no reason Mizzou should not be a consistent top 25 school again. It makes zero sense. First off,
it makes some sense. They went to the SEC and haven't had any success.
No, they were supposed to get better in basketball. Everyone goes, okay, football's going to be a struggle, but okay, outside of Kentucky and Florida.
That's fair.
My God, like,
it just feels like the entire athletic department has been largely treading water at best.
And let's hire an AD who only cares about money and not on-field performance. That's great.
You need the money to pay for the buyout, which they're going to,
Well, if you're going to do that,
they're going to wait and do the buyout whenever it's a little bit more financially stable for them to do so. But are you nervous? This I'm sad for you that we are this early on. In my book, college basketball has not actually started yet.
Sure.
And your season is over.
Way over.
It is over.
Way over.
Are you worried that Do you think that even whenever they do ultimately fire Konzo Martin, I always had an extra wuh sound early in his name that I'm not sure it's supposed to be there. It's only been 5 years. Give me five more. You know what? Let's give him five more years. Are you concerned that you're going to be able to land any sort of coach of any pedigree to come take this job? It's not a good job right now.
No, it's a horrible job right now. Again, that's why you have to get someone early, a.k.a. Kim English at George Mason, before he pops off and then everyone is looking. I mean, the fact that Maryland is looking for him, that's a tough get because he grew up in the D.C. area. Like,
your concern is that by the end of the season, he's going to be too hot for Mizzou.
He's going to be too hot for Mizzou. And do you choose, for him, do you choose a place where you grew up or do you choose a place where you went to school for 4 years? And that's a fair assessment. He might choose Maryland either way.
Yeah.
Hell, I would take
Mark Turgeon.
I would take Turgeon. I mean, he's been a very solid head coach for a long time. At least bring us back to respectability. I always said Bruce Pearl, but Mizzou decides, hey,
Bruce Pearl would not take this job. I said
now.
This yesterday.
He had a chance to get. They had a chance to get Bruce Pearl a while ago. I think they actually had a chance, and they decided let's go the whole non-allegation route. A guy who doesn't buy the books. And where has that got you?
Okay, so with that in mind, Follow me here. Follow me perhaps to Greece. Follow me to Iona.
Oh, yeah.
Follow me to Rick Pitino.
Inject it into my veins.
It would be such a hilariously fun hire. And I think that, unless I'm missing something, and I'm probably missing something, it feels like a lot of the paying players, and I do think there was probably some untoward additional things around there with people brought to the places the players were at, I believe, now that I'm thinking about it. Our sensibilities have loosened up. We're in the area of name, image, and likeness. Everybody's getting paid now. Let Rick Pitino come and be your vampire on the sideline that can recruit, that can coach, and that can also, you know, break the rules softly in an era where we're all playing fast and loose with the rules at this point.
Bill Self has been bending the
rules.
I don't
think he's going to take the message. Oh, no. That's not what she meant.
Oh, by the way, fun fact.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't bring that one
yeah,
up.
Yeah, you want to talk about that for another 20 minutes?
Yeah, Quinn Snyder. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, doing great in the NBA.
Sure is.
Jordan Clarkson, not great at Mizzou, great in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
What
did Bill Self do after Mizzou did not hire him?
I blocked that completely out of my memory.
That name sounds really. Did it go by William? Bill Self. S-E-L-F? I'll Google him later.
So, yeah, give me anyone who slightly bends the rules, but I don't care. Just win games. Everyone bends the rules in college sports.
Yeah.
Do you think Nick Saban hasn't been bending the rules?
I think that literally every single athletic department in the NCAA has some sort of violation that either has not fully been brought to the light or that enough people have said, who bleeping cares? Because most of those rules are bad.
And just say, you know what, we didn't do anything and be like Kansas or North Carolina and get away with nothing. Or
just fight it forever.
Or admit that you did something and be like Mizzou and just get...
Oklahoma State.
Yeah. It's so stupid.
No, just fight it.
Yeah. So, yes.
Good example to set, NCAA. You guys are really doing a bang-up job.
Yeah.
Last thing before we can talk about some other stuff that's not in this realm. But you mentioned that you're glad that this is simply happening again. So to zoom out away from the micro of this game and to the macro of KU and Mizzou playing sports against each other once again. I guess maybe KU fans are the ones that lean a little more towards the sort of spurned lover of the duo, saying, you left us, we didn't leave you. And I am not terribly precious about any of that. I don't particularly care that Mizzou went to the SEC to get some of that good football money. And again, if you're KU right now, you can also point and laugh because of the conversation we've just been having. And that's fair enough. For me, I want more regional rivalries to happen regardless of what conference alignment they may have had in years past or maybe never even had. I wish KU-Wichita State played more often. I'm glad that Mizzou and Wichita State played. I'd like to see more UMKC having them in the mix. Occasionally you get an upset like we saw already this year. Sorry again about that for you. But I like a regional rivalry regardless of what sort of party lines you have to cross to make that happen, especially now in this era of super realigning conferences, which is especially that leaves basketball to be hit by shrapnel because all of the moving and shaking is because of the football programs. I'm really glad that this is happening, and it sounds like you are also, and maybe that it would continue and hopefully, for your sake at least, have a real rivalry actually develop there again.
I mean, some of the best memories, I think even for Kansas fans to an extent, as far as if you're taking away Final Fours, because Mizzou, we wouldn't know, has been Mizzou-Kansas matchups. I mean, let's be real here. Marcus Denman going off. Thomas Gardner going off. There's so many fun memories growing up between Kansas, Missouri. Who was the dude? Was it like Christian Moody? The dude that missed two free throws for Kansas.
Sure.
And I still remember where I was.
Yeah.
I also remember where I was when Thomas Robinson didn't get called for a foul when he completely decked, I think it was Denman. On that shot, but Kansas fans would never let me hear the end of it. It's just fun. That's to me what makes sports fun. I don't care about Missouri playing Auburn.
Right.
I don't have any, and again, maybe in time I will. But
sure, 10 years you might. But
still, it's not even the same. They're trying hard with Missouri and Arkansas, and there's still some sort of, you could say rivalry. And then this, again, kind of close to proximity.
Right.
But Kansas, Missouri, there's just something different. Hell, when... It was based on burning Lawrence down. you're basing this on of literally burning the other college to the ground, a city. You can't make it up.
Right. It's a great rivalry, and you know, we could, maybe we pivot to Chiefs Raiders on this front, but like, it's weird because we just saw Chiefs Raiders like two games removed from Chiefs Raiders round one from our perspective here, at least obviously the bye week in there as well. But if the Raiders for some reason ended up in the NFC West, maybe this is a clunky analogy because it doesn't really work this way. Your bottle of water is like an optical illusion right now. You sat it on top of your lid. And I look
good
like
thing we're around a lot of electronics.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. It's okay. Sometimes the roof leaks and water lands right in that general area. So I think at this point everything's pretty much waterproof. But if the Raiders had some reason to – maybe they had a competitive advantage if they moved to the NFC West and it was a huge reorganizing that the league did. You know what I would love to see the NFL do with the 13th – or excuse me, the 17th game? And they could already be doing this. Instead of doing the algorithm of – you go to this division, where you finish. Bring rivalry games to your 17th game. Make it rivalry week. And maybe it's not perfectly balanced because if you're the Patriots, you're always playing, I don't know, the Colts. And maybe in some years that is terrible for both of those teams because they're good. Some years, maybe the Patriots just run away with it. Whatever. I think that getting sensitive about that in sports with the ultimate conclusion of it meaning less rivalry games, at some point you've lost the plot, right? If you're a KU fan that says, wish you guys went to the SEC. Yeah, and KU might have been 45 minutes away from going to the Big Ten. You know, because money opens up, spots open up, and you go grab whatever you can get and try to stay alive. But it is so rare to have a rivalry, I think, this good of, like I said, of proximity, because you walk up and down the hallways here or at literally any workplace in the Kansas City area, and you're going to find a KU grad and a Mizzou grad. You're going to find somebody who roots for KU who didn't go to KU and someone who roots for Mizzou who didn't go to Mizzou. Like, you are going to find those people everywhere. It's more fun when the teams play. So it's not just all empty talk and empty yapping.
Well, that's why I personally was very upset when the Chargers went from San Diego to
L.A.
I mean, there's that to me, because the Chargers fan base,
the Raiders going Oakland to Vegas,
and I hate
maybe
that.
Even more so.
I especially hate that one. And I understand you could say that the LA Raiders, I understand that, but Vegas? That to me, it made no sense, because the Oakland fan base, and even before then the LA, they were so passionate.
Mm-hmm.
And say what you will, they're a bunch of clowns, the face paint, the spikes.
They got a brand, man.
I mean like, hell, their quarterback even wears makeup, that eyeliner of Derek Carr. But it was fun, right? Like, I enjoyed the, I don't want to say hatred, but like, there was a legitimate rivalry.
The black hole, if you broke off a long touchdown in Oakland and you were entering through the black hole, you might get hit by something thrown from the black hole. That's not going to happen in Vegas, man. If somebody throws something from the stands in Vegas and it hits a player's helmet, they're going to get sniped from the top of their Roomba stadium or whatever. Like, I think that's a good point. I like that.
Yeah, and same thing with the Chargers. And again, San Diego, it's not like they were the most passionate fan base.
Right.
But in L.A., they're really just – it's nothing. It's like 17 fans, some dudes who are just walking down the street saying, hey, I saw $8 tickets on StubHub. Let me go in here.
Yep.
It just – to me, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, it takes some of the air out of it, which I think is also like we've said, I think that's part of the reason that it's great to have Mizzou and KU back. So – let's stick with Chiefs Raiders then for a little bit, because as I've mentioned, you can check out Sterling and the other cast of characters on the Arrowhead Addict podcast and everything that he does there. So tell me what I should care about for Chiefs Raiders round two. No Darren Waller is obviously enormous for the Raiders offense, but beyond that, I mean, these are relatively similar teams. This isn't going to be a situation where the Chiefs, you know, when they play the Chargers at the beginning of the year and they'll play them again coming up on Thursday. Those are very different teams. The Chiefs' defense is fundamentally different from point A to point B. Are these teams different from the first time they played a few weeks ago?
No.
Do you expect it to go any differently?
Slightly. I don't think the Chiefs put up 41. I think the Chiefs put up, let's say, 27, 28. The Chiefs' offense hasn't rolled at all. They haven't clicked seemingly all season long. Mm-hmm. I don't expect them to all of a sudden, against the Raiders, it comes together again. That seems a little bit foolhardy to believe. I think it improves. Defensively, though, I think they're legit. Yeah. Ever since they got Melvin Ingram, and I said Ingram might not do much. He's done more than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But I go, Ingram might not do anything. But the fact that he's playing edge and that gave him the excuse to move Chris Jones back inside was the complete difference maker. Because now they're getting pressure. It makes the secondary look incredible. When you have Nick Bolton, surprisingly, Ben Niemann in the right spot. Anthony Hitchens is playing well.
Yep.
Willie Gay Jr. doing his thing. It just makes the whole defense look better when you're getting pressure on the quarterback. Frank Clark is obviously healthy. The Bubba Guts, knock on wood, seem to be behind him, the hamstring.
Yep.
And then Jaron Reed's off of the milk carton,
right,
finally making plays. And now you actually are talking about how deep the defensive line is.
Yeah.
And it's just been a complete 180. And I think, again, it all starts with Chris Jones moving back inside.
Yeah, it's interesting because they were starting to do that a little bit more before they traded for Ingram. So I do think that they realized their mistake on that front, or just that they weren't being productive enough on that front. But having Ingram in, and then, as you mentioned there, Frank Clark getting healthy, and then having Chris Jones spending a lot more of his time on the inside. And they need to move him around a little bit, which is fine. You have a matchup you like, move him outside. That's okay with me. But as the default, keeping him in the interior, having that rotation around, again, a healthy Frank Clark, like, it really is crazy to think that, you know what, having one unit play a lot better helps every other unit play a lot better. Then those units start playing better, which helps the original unit. It is a team game, which I think oftentimes maybe we miss a little bit. But it's even funnier to me that you said the thing that I said yesterday, which is that I think I might be more confident in the Chiefs' defense as a unit right now than the Chiefs' offense. Now, a little bit of that is tainted by the last, you know, years of what we've seen from both of these units. And so, in a vacuum, I would rather have, if you said, hey, you get to restart, you have to start a new team, and you can either start with the Chiefs' offense or the Chiefs' defense, we're all taking Patrick Mahomes, okay? But
does Dan Sorensen, does he
move the needle a little bit for me?
Armani Watts, maybe?
Yeah, that does. I'm starting, you know what? I'm starting to tilt again. I'm leaning Mahomes. Should I get Ben Niemann? But it's funny to be at this place where we're more confident that the defense's renaissance is for real than we are that the offense will figure it out before it's too late, which is crazy to me. So whenever you look at the offense and you're at that point also, what is it that you're most – what is it that has – perhaps assuaded you from some earlier optimism in terms of them looking like their old self again this year?
I think part of it is the coaching staff. I love Andy Reid, and I'm not saying he's all of a sudden some bad head coach, but I do think there's a little bit of the case, hey, we've been to back-to-back Super Bowls. We know what works. We don't need to change.
Mm-hmm.
I think teams around the NFL have changed, and the Chiefs are still trying to do the same stuff. When teams are running this shell, this cover two, whatever you want to do, where's the crossing routes? Mm-hmm. Where's the short over the middle? Where are the slants that made Michael Thomas a king in New Orleans? Where is Clyde Edwards-Helaire with this amazing offensive line? You see the numbers. You see the holes they're getting.
Yep.
And you know me. I'm not team run the football.
Mm-hmm.
That's not me.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's there, you got to take it.
Feel free.
And,
sure.
And I do think some of it does have to do with Patrick Mahomes. I think he might have, quote-unquote, the yips. I've talked about it. I think it's a similar situation to Chuck Knoblauch when he couldn't throw the ball from second base to first.
It hasn't gotten that
not
bad.
Not that bad. But John Lester, you know, when he couldn't do a pickoff move. But I think there's something there because I've seen way more spiked balls than I've seen from him in the past.
Yeah.
And I get it. You might lose a little confidence when Tyreek Hill's having four balls go through his hands into the D-back's arms. Travis Kelce's having issues. Byron Pringle. It's like you can't trust anyone. So I understand that the concept of Patrick saying, well, man, if I'm not completely perfect, I got to spike the ball. Because if I even touches their hands, it's getting picked off.
Right.
So I think that's an issue. And I don't think it's something that's like you can't change or something that it can't get figured out. But I don't think it's all of a sudden going to be 1 week. There was one thing I wanted to say was, when they ended up, was it kneeling the ball, the end of the half, was that...
Not kneeling, but running the clock.
Run the clock.
Handing it off. And then
was that last game or the game before?
That was against the Broncos.
Against the Broncos.
Yeah. They had 69 seconds remaining and two timeouts.
Nice. The reason why I wasn't necessarily frustrated in the sense that it's the wrong decision, because I understand the fact of the Chiefs are dominating, Broncos were not going to move the football. Why do anything that could potentially lead to Broncos getting three or seven? I get it. In that sort of vacuum. But what I think Mahomes needed in that situation was to be loose. Same thing in a basketball game when guys, shot clock's winding down. You may be struggling all game. Shot clock all of a sudden hits one. You got to force it up. What do? He makes some crazy turnaround, gets him going. Mahomes, back against the wall, two touchdowns, needs to march down the field. That, to me, lets him be loose. And that could have been the drive that breaks him out of this slump. Same thing last play against Green Bay when they did that first down. What happened? I think he
did a Patrick Mahomes thing.
It slowly broke him out of this shell of of where he feels controlled. I think the same thing could have happened, but we'll never know.
The other element of that is that it really made me it might have bothered me more than it bothered you on the front end here. It made me feel like Andy Reid didn't trust his own offense to just simply be trusted with the football. If your goal is just to run out the clock and not even try to score there, at the very least, why hand it off to Darrell Williams twice and then let Patrick Mahomes throw it on 3rd and 8?
Sure.
At that point, I mean, I guess run it again if that's your only goal is to keep running out the clock, at least take that last time out from Denver there. But at that point, you have made a decision that says, I think my team is quarterbacked by Teddy Bridgewater after Teddy Bridgewater's team just went on that 20-play drive. I mean, in this, you're right. They were dominating in terms of the score and not letting the Broncos actually have anything pay off there. But they just got run over for 88 yards over the course of 20 plays, and they were up by 7. They were up by 7. If it was 24-3 right then, hand it off to Darrell 3 times, get your bags, get in there for halftime, come back out and close this bleep out and then move it along. That's fine. It wasn't, though. Well, they were getting the ball back next. Maybe Andy Reid thought, let's just put all of our eggs in that basket. Well, that basket got dropped by Tyreek Hill and handed to the Broncos. Like, that could have been a terrible turning point in this game for me, then ultimately, because not many of those points, not all of those points, I guess, most of the points, but not all of those points were scored by the offense. You got Dan Sorensen's pick 6. This was a 16-point offensive effort against the freaking Broncos. That makes me feel like the Giants and the Packers games did. Great to keep yourself alive, get the win, keep moving, buy yourself some more time to get everything right in a little bit, but it doesn't make me feel good. I didn't feel good doing the post-game show that night.
I guess really quickly, one, Patriots won ugly games for 15 years.
Yes.
So now that the Chiefs are winning, this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Not every season, not every game is going to be beautiful. It's not going to be a masterpiece.
Right.
I feel like a lot of people on Twitter especially are like, well, the Chiefs are winning 41-0 every single game.
They did score 27 points every game for like a year and a half something crazy.
So now when they're not, and they're being average, everyone's acting like, well, this is the worst thing that's ever happened in sports, and they forget that, you know,
23 points, sorry.
Tyler Thigpen was a thing.
Yeah.
Two, I think Andy Reid in this situation might have been scared of another drop pass interception.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might have played a role. I truly believe that. So
25 consecutive games scoring 23 points or more.
That's insane. And three,
we got spoiled.
And three, I know I kind of made a dig at Dan Sorensen earlier. I want to say he has a role in this team.
Yes.
He's getting paid like the veteran's minimum, basically. It's like $2 million. You're not funding a player of that caliber for $2 million. He was never supposed to play 100% of the snaps. The fact that Spags is now using him in the right role has obviously unlocked something in him to be himself. And we're seeing Ben Neiman in the correct role be good. Give Spags credit. Give these players credit. They have to be put in the right position. You put me out there, I'm not going to succeed.
Yep.
Yell at me all you want, but I'm not going to be successful.
Not going to get fast.
Put Dan one-on-one against a tight end. He's not going to succeed. But now that Spags has used him in the right situation, he's done better. The defense looks better as a whole. As much as they want to complain about Nick Bolton getting drastically cut back on snaps.
Yeah.
It's tough to complain when the defense is performing like they are right now.
They don't trust him in coverage right now. I think that's relatively earned.
He has improved a little bit in coverage. I want to say
absolutely
that from week one.
Absolutely. I asked him about that a few weeks ago at a presser. Like, hey, where do you feel like you're at from week one to now? He said, oh, I'm definitely in a better place, and I also still have a long ways to go. And he's right on both of those counts. The thing for him is going to be, can he do that next year, really? Because again, we're talking about guys playing in roles. It warms my cold little heart to hear you say that about Neiman and Sorensen, because I just don't feel like I've heard a lot of other people zero in on that, and I literally could not agree more. You put Dan Sorensen and Ben Neiman in positions where they are able to do the things that they are best at, and good things happen? Are you sure? Are you sure that good things happen whenever you don't ask Dan Sorensen to play like Ed Reed? Like, this is all better. And you think that they win against the Raiders on Sunday, it sounds like?
It's called nuance, Briscoe.
A little nuance, everybody. Join me and Sterling on Boat New on the SS Nuance.
And we only play Yacht Rock.
We play Yacht Rock out here.
But
we have nuanced takes about role players being... That really is the whole game here. It is how I feel about everybody from Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Nick Bolton,
yep,
to Ben Neiman and Dan Sorensen, to Byron Pringle, mm-hmm, and DeMarcus Robinson. If you're playing NFL football, you're so bleeping good at football, it's mind-boggling. And also, a little bit of nuance of how valuable is this player or how often should this player be in this situation is where I think largely sports media has failed the sports fan at that for the most part over the last 50 years or whatever. I think we're getting better, though, mostly just because you and I are here.
Yeah. It's either you're the GOAT and the greatest of all time, yeah, or you are trash and deserve to never see a football field. What are you doing? You're a disgrace to your family. Like, there's zero.
A disgrace to your family. Yep, that's 100% right.
How dare you become the best at your prospective job?
Let me get you out of here on this last thing. What are the Sixers going to do with Ben Simmons? What do you want them to do? What do you hope? What do you realistically hope happens? Stu's a Sixers fan. I mean, you worked for the Sixers.
I worked for them.
He was a point guard.
Let him shoot two free. Yeah, with Ish Smith. Zaya Cannon. Yeah. Let him shoot two free throws.
Okay.
He's going to miss, and everyone gets a Frosty.
Okay.
That's it.
That's it. That's the whole thing. I thought you at least would say, all right, Ben, you shoot two free throws. If you make both of them, we'll send you to whatever team you ask. If you make one of them, we will trade you to a deal that makes sense for us. If you miss them both, you have to give us you have to rip up your contract.
And for those of you that know, the whole joke is if you miss two free throws in a Sixers game,
oh, I don't know this.
Everyone in the stadium gets a Frosty.
Okay.
And that was the whole thing with Isaiah Thomas when he missed two free throws and
the fans in the post game show,
he goes, it was for a Frosty. That's the whole.
I forgot about that.
So they take missed free throws very seriously.
I'm trying to turn it into a more high stakes situation.
Yeah,
Frosties
sure.
Aren't enough.
There's talks of CJ McCollum.
Yeah.
I mean, that's best case scenario. I know folks are like, well, why would you get him? He can't play defense and he's just a better version of Seth Curry. Sure, but I think that makes a lot of sense.
Is that fair? Is calling CJ McCollum a better Seth Curry fair?
At this point, I think, yeah.
It might be.
And then I know Beard is all about OJ Anunoby and Fred Van Fleet for Ben Simmons, and I like that, but I also feel like both sides are sitting there saying we want more. There's not a good case.
Picks in the NBA always bleep me up because a first round pick from any team in an NFL draft has a lot of value.
Yeah.
I don't know what if either the Sixers or the Raptors had to throw in an extra first? Does that move the needle? I don't know.
Not at all. Not really.
Not really. It's not a high lottery pick.
The contract's horrible. Ben Simmons can't shoot free throws. He doesn't care about to me, I have always said this. He seems like a guy who's very good at basketball, and he acts like it's a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it, because not everyone's going to love what they do.
Sure.
So I'm not going to sit here and just say that, but it's very frustrating when you have so much talent, you're getting paid so much money, and you're sitting here going, well, I'm good enough.
Yeah.
I won, you know, this award. I'm a all-pro, whatever they call it. All-star.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very frustrating when guys just seemingly have so much talent, get paid that amount of money, and then just go, all right, I'm out.
This is a remarkably strange situation.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking that, you know, some of that I think you can prescribe to some guys fairly, and sometimes I think it's probably unfair. And this is just one of the most bizarre ones. And the NBA is good for that, you know? Kyrie Irving is not currently the non-playing NBA player getting the most conversation on this show today. That's pretty wild. That's a wild place to be. Sterling, thank you for your time here this evening. It's been wonderful. If people want more of you, they can check out Darren and Sterling, 3 o'clock weekdays over on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. I call it Sterling and Darren, but I want to get the branding right, you know, for people listening now. And the Arrowhead Addict podcast. Where else? Give your best plug. Oh, at Homestretch KC on Twitter. Give me your best plug for everything where people can find you, anything that I missed.
Find me on Twitter at Homestretch KC. You'll see me be a dumbass. It's very funny. Like, six people understand my humor, so maybe you could be the seventh.
You might be the seventh person to enjoy Stu's tweets.
Check out the Airhead Addict podcast. It's me and Matt Connor, and then we also do one with me, Matt Connor, Matt Verderam, and Patrick Allen for a post-game Chief show. That's on YouTube. Fantastic. It's a lot of fun. And then Darren and Sterling down there, ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. And now we're doing some like Facebook Live stuff. Darren handles all the technological stuff. I'm basically 87 years old.
Yeah, Sterling is an 84-year-old, 27-year-old?
Correct.
Yep, and that's just who he is. And that's, you know, and if that appeals to you, you have all those things he just mentioned. Thank you, Stu.
Thank you.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Let's take a break. I don't think this hour is getting salvaged. This hour is going to be really disappointing to everyone who is like, oh, he did a show with Bobby Bell and Bill Moss. I bet that's really interesting. I wonder what else he did tonight. And then it's just a long...
Something else. Something else,
which is a Venus flytrap.
A what?
A Venus flytrap.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, look at all this normal Chiefs talk we do with interesting Chiefs players. Yeah. And then just, they fly inside and snaps close, and they're trapped here now. It's almost entirely sports. They're trapped here.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to the illustrious Sterling Holmes for joining us for a good long chat about everything. And you should follow him on Twitter at HomestretchKC and check out Darren and Sterling. It's him and Darren Smith over on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. You'll hear, easy for me to say, Darren a little bit later actually tonight, assuming I get to all the audio that I'm going to attempt to get to. We'll see. Let's go ahead and do one of these here, Rudy. Let's go ahead and make the jump to this Melvin Ingram clip because I don't have a whole lot to unpack around this, so we can get in and out in a couple of minutes on it. But I thought it was sort of interesting, and also this clip is a little bit of a look at how the sausage is made in terms of press conferences. Sometimes his whole presser was a trip because he sometimes his answers are literally just a couple of words, and then you have to ask another follow up, and it can be kind of an interesting dynamic. And in this one, you'll hear a couple of different questions that I've left in there that are all sort of along the same lines or edited down. Because whenever Steve Spagnuolo talked earlier yesterday, he mentioned that Melvin Ingram, he'll just move around wherever he's sitting during a meal or whatever. Sometimes he'll sit with, you know, Tershawn Wharton and Mike Dana, or he'll go sit with some other young guys or whatever. And I thought that was kind of interesting. A lot of other people did as well. So first question here is from our own Darren Smith. You'll hear my follow-up after that. I think there might be two more in there, all kind of along this same topic of what it is that has made Melvin Ingram a guy that wants to pass along his veteran wisdom and how he got to this point. So it'll all make sense on its own here, starting with Darren asking how he's influenced some of these young guys in the Chiefs defensive line room.
I don't know. I just go out and share what I've learned over the years through my experience and through my time playing. And I guess that they have an impact. If it do, if it don't, it don't. It's just me trying to pass down what was passed down to me on how to study film, on how to approach the game and things like that. Nothing crazy.
Why is that important to you?
Oh, slow down. Everybody don't talk at once.
Why is that important to you? Did you have somebody that was that kind of guy for you whenever you were younger?
Yeah, no, I had a bunch of vets when I came into the league that did it the right way and studied the game the right way and played the game the right way and approached it the right way. So I was blessed enough to come up under those guys.
I mean, you mentioned the impact of veterans with Josh's question. I just was wondering if you could share some of the names that
Eric Weddle, Sean Phillips, Takeo Spikes, Jared Johnson. It's a lot to name. I grew up Dwight Freeney. It's a lot of them. So just being behind those guys and being able to take a little piece of everything from them. Antonio Gates, it's Phillip Rivers. Like it was, I came up with a lot of great ones.
To Darren's question, Spags mentioned that you know he sees he's spending a lot of time with some of the young guys like Mike Dana and Turk Gordon. This young core guys on the defense. What's your kind of impressions of them, and what stands out to you about them?
We really got some great ones. We really got some great ones that got a chance to be special in this league. And I feel like the more time you spend with them and the more time you show them stuff, when it comes that moment in the game when you need them, you ain't worried about it because you already know it. And from the first day I got here, I always knew they were special.
I thought that last part was interesting just as a way to think about young players. Whenever the moment comes around, you either have faith that a guy who has not had to prove it before, either have faith that guy is going to take care of whatever he's got to do there, or you don't. I mean, I'm super projecting now unfairly, I think, on this front, but like the times where, you know, where Tyrann Mathieu would maybe have to take an extra couple of steps to try to give a backup plan because maybe the Chiefs weren't fully confident that Juan Thornhill was going to be where he needed to be. Again, I think that's unfair to Mathieu and Thornhill probably. But there was some weird stuff going on with Thornhill over the last calendar year or something, though. But if you're in one of those situations, or certainly with young guys on the offensive line, I mean, I think that there is trust in Trey Smith and Creed Humphrey. But if there wasn't, what do Joe Tooney and Orlando Brown and Mike Rimmers to Lucas Niang to Andrew Wiley, what do they have to do differently to accommodate for the fact that they don't know if you're ready for live bullets or not? I thought that was an interesting way of looking at it. And then also a little bit of character there of who Melvin Ingram is, who he can be to the young guys, and why he is that way, who he learned from. I thought that was all kind of interesting. And interesting enough to get us through another segment of Almost Entirely Sports. We got to take another break, folks. We went way too long with Uncle Stu. We'll talk about something else whenever we come back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Uh-oh, smoke just started coming out of a CPU. There's a computer on fire, I'm pretty sure.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Rudy, on a imperfect night, I would say, for him on a technical basis. You haven't given up 8 earned runs in 2 innings or anything. You had a couple pitches
hang. Some little things here and there, yeah. Almost forgot to hit record on the computer once. We got it.
That would have been a 5-run inning there. That would have been a rough one, depending on how far it would have taken. I loaded
the bases, but I worked out of it only giving up a run.
Yeah,
and
that
you're
seems
like,
right.
You know what? That was not a good inning. Sure, he walked the bases loaded. The command was all over the place, but he battled.
Speaking of which, how long is it going to take before we willingly talk about baseball? I think because, again, it's partially
above. I won't
talk
about baseball until baseball cares about baseball.
Wow.
Yeah. These players playing a game. They want money. It's a children's game.
Oh, you're trying to get
the
players,
billionaire
actually.
Owners
okay.
Who are greedy.
Who are not greedy.
Because America.
Okay.
Do they have to start a strike? Do they have to lock out the players? Of course not. But that's the American dream, dang it.
To lock out your employees because you want to make even more comically large amounts of money and not pay them.
Well, did you read the letter? Mark Manfred. I know it's not his name.
That's not his name.
Mark Manfred.
His name is Robert. His name is Robert F. Manfred. And his middle name's F is short for, what were you going to say, Rudy?
He knows this is bad for baseball.
Yeah.
He understands.
Yeah, he doesn't care, though.
I'm on his side.
Okay.
I met him once. Have I told you about that?
No.
So, So, I did an internship. I also had an internship in Baltimore for the Cal Ripken World Series.
Yeah, because you slept on
an
air mattress
for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Because they were not going to pay for me to stay up there. I had to find my own lodging, and it's really expensive to stay somewhere for 3 weeks.
And this is how your worldview has come together in terms of being pro-owner.
Yeah, and met Rob Manfred. Had a conversation with him. Talked to him and some other guy about basically, I forget what the technical sport is called, but it's basically like old school baseball where you had like no gloves or anything. It was how they played baseball in like the 1800s or whatever.
Sure.
And there's a group of people that still play it like that today, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And we were just talking, just three of us just kicked back and just chatting. Just cutting it up. Good times.
What was your read on Rob Manfred?
Awkward.
Like was your interaction was awkward, or you think he's an awkward person?
He was a little socially awkward. And I feel like I'm very knowledgeable in that because I'm socially awkward at times. I can spot another socially awkward person pretty well.
Your social awkwardness radar,
yeah,
you're saying, is finely tuned.
It was a short conversation. He didn't seem like a bad dude, right? I don't think he didn't seem like a person who goes around kicking puppies. But just seemed like an awkward person who totally doesn't fully understand people. I think that his what I've seen him do professionally since then kind of backs that up.
I met Roger Goodell once, and I do think he kicks puppies.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I didn't meet Roger Goodell. That part wasn't true.
I met I don't know if you'll remember the name, Anthony Becht, tight end.
Tight end from some,
the Jets and the Buccaneers.
Did he go to Miami?
He might have.
Did
Miami.
I just rip your game? If I got this right, your game is mine now.
Oh, my goodness.
This is for Rudy's game.
Oh, my goodness. Because he played with Chad Pennington with the Jets. That's like how I knew of him.
West Virginia. The game is still yours.
Close.
Dang it.
You were close, though.
I do remember him as a Jet, though.
Yeah, because like, I really remember him as a Jet because of...
Green uniforms, maybe?
I'm going to be honest. I lost track of the time. We're way past where
I thought. I looked at the clocks, and I was like, we're not going to hit SportsCenter.
I'm going to tell this real story real fast. I knew of Anthony Becht really well because one of my favorite Madden teams was like Madden 01, 02, 03.
Uh-huh.
I loved playing with Chad Pennington, Curtis Martin, and Anthony Bett, and another white wide receiver that they had whose name I can't remember.
It was 2001 like, Jets, you think
yeah,
it was?
Yeah, right around the early 2000s. He was a Jet for a while. He wore number 83. His name was Wayne Chabet? Chabet?
We're not going to break until I land this on Pro Football Reference. Well, Vinny Testaverde started every game in 2001. So you think it was the 02 roster?
It might have been like
02,
03,
2000.
Yeah. Found it. Wayne Chabet, wide receiver. That's who it was. Yes. And Santana Moss was on that team, too. So I was a big Jets guy.
Yeah, Chad Pennington got the starts in 2002. So there you go. Wow. That's not even the bump music, Rudy. Weirdly enough, this segment has been the one that really got away from him. I don't even need the break, the music. We can just throw it a break. I can just say, well, let's go to break, and then you can just hit the button. It's fine. Rudy's rattled. He doesn't have any faith in his fastball right now. He can't locate his fastball right now. He is screwed.
I'm sleepy.
It's not even 9 p.m.
yet. 40 seconds.
I don't need 40 seconds. I could have just thrown a break. We could have gotten this moving and gotten that much closer, 40 seconds closer to giving the people Matt Verderam.
Is this not a better experience for everybody? Is everybody else up? My bad. Twitch didn't hear any of this. That's a joke. No, that was a joke.
Are we on the air?
Yes, we're on the air, I think.
I have a text from Lebo that says, hey, we're not, you guys aren't on the air right now. But honestly, that's a good thing. It's a weirdly rude thing for Lebo to say on a day off, but apparently he's listening. That's not true. That was a joke, unlike all of Rudy's other mistakes, which were very real. Matt Verderam next.